Hello, welcome to Extra Sequential episode something something of the what the
episode 38, my friend.
Is it the first week of May?
It is the first week.
First week of May 2011.
Correct.
My name is Mladen.
My name is Chris, and we are talking about manga, if, as Mladen says it, and comics.
And graphic novels, yeah.
Pop culture-y goodness.
Yep. Although it's more like talking at you, as we always say.
With the slight aroma of cinnamon.
What?
Cinnamon.
Oh, you've completely lost me there.
I don't know.
And in today's show, we'll be talking about... this is a topic I picked, and I can tell Chris was reluctant. We were going to be talking about... I guess how women and men are drawn in superhero comics in particular, and more so at the kind of the cheesecake phenomenon, which is where women are drawn ridiculously sexy all the time.
So you know a lot about women, but not much about superhero comics, but I'm the other way around, so I think between us we should have a good discussion.
Do I know a lot about women?
Well, you've got a girlfriend, so you went up with me.
You're a genius.
What's the secret? Where's your book coming out?
Okay. That's going to be our feature topic, and as well as our usual What We've Been Reading segment, I see Chris has an enormous pile, which somehow dwindled. I guess half of them aren't worth talking about.
Well, the other half that you previously saw was my yet-to-read pile that I'll read on the train.
Be honest, is that pile bigger than your what you've read pile?
It is. What? What's the question?
Well, okay. Like, I see you get your long box usually, right? Like, yeah. And you buy a fair few comics. Would that be a true statement or a false statement?
I do. Yes, yeah. That is correct.
How often would you say they just go unread and then you forget about them?
I read every comic I buy, but I don't always read every trade or original graphic novel. Like, if it's 120 pages or whatever, it takes me weeks or months to get around to it.
That's money down the drain. But you're not a collector, so you're not...
No, it's you know, for those rainy days.
Do you buy variant covers?
I do not.
Yay. Good man. Sorry to all you variant cover collectors out there. We've got people listening who don't know what they are. That's when they release a comic, but with separate covers, so you can buy it twice if you...
And it's rare. So it'll be
is
like,
it, though?
Yeah, it's like, 1 in 25, and the variant cover will be, a different, or 1 in 50 or 1 in 100. So yeah. They're kind of hard to get.
The idea is they're meant to make more money for you if you try and sell them later.
Correct.
But I don't know how often that really happens. Anyway, kind of got off topic here. What we should be doing is talking about the comic book news.
Dark Horse.
Yes.
One of the largest independent, well, I don't know if they can be called independent publishers anymore. They've been around for like 30 years. We just mentioned Dark Horse Presents last week. Did you read it, actually?
I flicked through parts of it. I started some of the stories in there, and then I was like, I have other things to do. I was knee-deep in Portal 2. So.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you about that, but I'll get to that later.
Talk about it later, yeah.
Dark Horse have just opened their digital store. You know, every man and their dog, comic book publisher-wise, has a digital store these days. So the Dark Horse Comics iOS digital app is now available for free download in the iTunes store, and it comes loaded with the first full issue of Hellboy Seed of Destruction. They're still working on an Android application to work with it, but any device with a modern web browser can be used to read Dark Horse Comics at digital.darkhorse.com, and I've checked it out, and it's pretty good. If you if you're new to kind of reading comics online, it's not a bad way. There's a whole bunch of free issues, and they're putting up a whole bunch of free issues like Conan, Beasts of Burden, Dungeon Siege, Falling Skies, which is the new Steven Spielberg, I think, Aliens TV series, yeah. Terminator, Solomon Kane, Carl Grendel. So every issue has a 3-page preview. So it's about 330 comics on there now, which isn't bad.
That's
good. It's only been up a couple of days.
Yeah.
That's at digital.darkhorse.com.
Mm.
So check it out. Obviously, you can buy comics, and they also you can buy bundles as well, which is pretty good. Like, not even the DC store does that. So if you want like an entire run of, say, Hellboy,
See, I think that's how people read.
Yeah,
want to read
and that's
comics
cheaper.
Those,
so rather than buying, every issue individually. Talk about an online free comics. Shannon Wheeler, who I believe is the creator of Too Much Coffee Man, and one of those independent kind of, do you know who that is?
No.
He's basically a guy with a coffee-shaped head and a TCM, I think, on his red overall kind of thing. There was opera about him last year. His book, I Thought You Would Be Funnier, is now available to read for free from Boom Studios. Shannon Wheeler is currently a contributor to the New Yorker magazine. And basically, this is a collection of his rejected New Yorker cartoons, because he's obviously quite a prolific guy. So, it's pretty good. It's been sold out of its first print run when it was released a couple of months ago, and the new print run in a gift-friendly hardcover format will be available later. But if you go to boomstudios.com from their site, you'll be able to read it online at issue, which is ISSW. And you could even email freefunnier@boom-studios.com to have a physical copy sent to you if you are eligible to vote for the Eisners. The Eisners are like the Academy Award of comic books, so they're encouraging people to vote for Best Humour Publication for this year's Eisner Awards for I Thought You Would Be Funnier.
Is it like the Logies? Anyone's eligible to vote?
Yes, I believe so.
Anyone who reads TV Weekly or whatever it is?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
Moving away from comics and onto films, new trailers for X-Men First Class and Transformers Dark of the Moon have been released.
Yeah.
And some interesting, Chris Evans had a few spoilers to say about the Captain America and Avengers films.
Yeah.
So the Captain America film, which opens in July, will have a portion set in a modern day. Because most of the film is set in World War II, and we wouldn't know if he'll come to the current day. In the classic comics, Captain America was frozen at the end of World War II, and then the Avengers in the 60s kind of thawed him out and said, you can come work for us. So he's kind of a man out of time. So there will be a film set in modern day, and he will also get a new costume for the Avengers. The Avengers just started shooting under the direction of Joss Whedon this week, and he'll be clashing with Iron Man's theology in the Avengers film, which will be pretty interesting, kind of like Civil War, because, you know, Cap's a very stoic, patriotic World War II kind of guy, so he'll be a fish out of water when
his
he comes
theology.
To modern day. His ideology, and Iron Man's more of a cutting-edge, playboy, billionaire, go-get-him kind of guy, so entrepreneur, so seeing those two kind of clash, like they do in the comics, would be pretty interesting.
Right.
So, so Captain America's out in July, Avengers ain't out till next year.
Good.
Anything newsworthy you want to say, my
I trolled the internets and, no.
Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah,
FCBD is on May 7th, so Saturday, May 7th, which will be the, in a few days after this goes up. So see if you can get freecomicbookday.com to see if your store, local store, is participating in this annual event. I know Quality Comics here on Hay Street in Perth is, and there's like dozens of different free comics. You can't just go in and grab it every one off the shelf and say, thank you very much. It's not that. There's specific free comic book day issues with their logo on. And so your store will have their own setup. And, it's really good. It's been going for a few years now. And it's a really good way to get
successful people
in. Yeah. People have signings. People come in costumes. A lot of parents bring their kids.
Yeah, they've got the, most years they tend to offer a lot of all ages or children-oriented comics as well. And it's been great to see a lot of the kind of more book publishers really get into it as well. Fantagraphics, Drawn and Quarterly have always been supporters of this. And it's perfect for them because they sell reprints of really good children's titles. And next week we'll be doing, just prior to that weekend, we'll be reviewing all of the available comics and maybe giving you people some of our favourite picks.
Yes, because there's so many posters. There's something for everybody, as Malad said, superheroes and independent stuff. So.
And there's definitely stuff in there that you might not think to grab, and we will tell you otherwise.
We will tell you what to grab.
Damn you, and you'll listen. All right.
So tell me about Portal 2.
I
saw a couple of reviews, and both reviews I saw, which was on Good Game.
Were they glowing?
Which was a Aussie Good Game game review, and X-Play, which is the American...
Both
shows, both hosts on both shows gave them 10 out of 10.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty awesome. I mean, I loved the first Portal. That original came out with the Orange Box, which was like Half-Life 2's Team Fortress release, and it had a few other things in it, and that was part of that. And it was just like an add-on, and it was so popular that that they felt like, okay, we can make a sequel in its own right. And just to fill people in, there are a few. They're not really enemies. You mainly solve levels as in you're like in a puzzle box.
Yep.
You've got this portal gun, which makes so you can jump from teleport from any point in the level to another, and you use physics to your advantage to jump around. And in this game, they added all these new features.
There's like liquid stuff.
There's liquid stuff that makes you bounce. It's very funny. J.R. Simmons, who some of you might recognize as Schillinger from...
J.K. Simmons.
Oh, is it J.K. Simmons? Sorry.
From the Spider-Man movies.
Spider-Man movies. The fast-talking news guy. Yep. And he plays kind of I really don't want to spoil too much of the game and tell people what he plays, because even that was a nice surprise.
I know Stephen Merchant, the English guy from... Office and
Ricky Gervais's friend, extras, and he plays your friend Robot at the beginning, and I couldn't stand him. He was
really?
Probably, for
People
me,
saying his character was hilarious. And
I hated his character. Like, I must be the only person. I found him so unbearable.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. But then I just wanted him to die. But then, like, the game takes a turn where I sort of like, okay, maybe that's partially intentional because he is really, really annoying and not that funny.
Oh, okay.
But the rest of the humor for me really worked, like the J.K. Simmons stuff, and GLaDOS was hilarious as always. That's the female AI
the computerized
that's
kind of
yeah.
voice.
Mm. I'm still looking for a second to play the co-op with me online. So if any fans of Extra Sequential are looking for a second player for the Portal 2 missions,
cool.
Hand up. Everyone's already paired off all their Shudder console users, so I can't play them.
So you have to be a PC user.
Well, you can play co-op, but I don't own a console version of the game. Do you know what I mean?
No. Okay, then.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, that was Portal 2. Oh, it has a comic in it as well, which I read.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you can unlock it because I just saw it was there. I'm like, oh, cool. And it tells like a little outside story. It's drawn a bit like, who's that artist who always draws Asian women? Kabuki, that guy.
Oh, David Mack.
David Mack. He always draws his Asian girlfriends.
Yep.
Yeah, David.
It's a yeah, bit. He has one. He doesn't have a harem.
No, apparently he's had several different Asian girlfriends.
Oh, okay.
And he always draws them into his comics and he just makes them play the same character.
Okay.
So I have a feeling that he only dates Asian women for that reason.
Cool.
Fair enough, David Mack. I can understand.
He's a handsome guy.
Is he?
Yeah, I've met him a couple of times.
Oh, okay.
Lovely gentleman.
Did you get all nervous and were your hands shaking?
No more than usual.
Yeah. Palms are sweaty, knees spaghetti, whatever.
Knees spaghetti, what?
Never mind. What have you been reading?
Did you watch The Royal Wedding?
I did watch The Royal Wedding. Was there a Blue Water comic based on it or something?
I think there might have been. There are a couple of comics.
Probably will be. Yeah.
We had a morning tea at the office, so we had cucumber sandwiches and English food, no tripe. And then, so we were watching it in the afternoon when it started as well, and David Beckham came on, and all the girls were, like, running to the office to see him. He's a very handsome man.
As long as he doesn't say anything.
Well, that's what they all said. He's a dreamboat to look at, but once he opened his mouth.
I play soccer.
He's literally, like, very softly spoken. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Okay, you didn't watch the whole thing, did you? It's like a four-hour-long Olympic opening ceremony kind of...
No,
slog.
I put it on when I got home, but and then I opened the internet this morning, and there was some woman who's a lip reader transcribed what the people were saying.
Secretly saying to each other,
and it was nothing interesting. It's like not lovely day, nice, lots of people here. It's like nothing revolutionary.
Yeah, I do like The Onion did some good coverage of this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
the website.
Yeah, yeah, They were quite humorous. Like, Prince William deigns to talk to the people he'd never associate with in a million years, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. And it's true. They want nothing to do with you except when they want you to get excited about their wedding.
Yes.
Anyway.
I saw Ian Thorpe was in there as well.
Yeah.
Swimmer.
Did he make a faux pas in any sense? Did he wear white?
No, but to all the girls in the office were very making interesting remarks about all the women that were like, oh, that skirt's above the knee and... what is she wearing? Looks like a kid. It's kind of interesting.
Anyway.
Okay, what I've been reading. The last issue of Brightest Day has just been released. I've talked about this a couple of times before. This is the fortnightly DC miniseries that has a whole bunch of heroes coming back from the dead, ties in with the Green Lantern, White Lantern thing. Mm-hmm. So Swamp Thing is back, the actual Swamp Thing now, we know. And also, if you look on the last page,
I will.
Maladin,
you'll
understand that John Constantine has rumoured. Is also back. He's the guy that we talked about, played by Keanu Reeves in Hellblazer.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's got blonde hair here. Did he always have dark hair?
No, he's always had blonde hair.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
only Keanu Reeves had dark hair. You lie!
And an American accent. Yeah. So it's a pretty good issue. But again, if you haven't been following this series, it'll make absolutely no sense whatsoever. But it looks like, Swamp Thing and John Constantine. Okay, Hellblazer now... fully square in the proper DC universe, so don't know what that means from now on, but...
I guess we'll find out. Didn't they already have this preview, or the same preview of
Arkham City?
Yeah.
The tie-in comic? They do, yeah. They've been running for, like, the last
in
few weeks.
In every comic, yeah. Jeez, that's a waste of backup pages. They could sell ads there.
That's true. Well, maybe the
I guess
video
that is
game
an ad.
Company paid
yeah.
for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Marvel lately have been doing these one-shots called Point One. So, and apparently they've been relatively successful. It's basically a jumping on point for their different series. So this
you can't
is,
keep having jumping on points, surely.
Well, you need it because continuity keeps getting convoluted. So this is the Avengers 12.1. I'm not a huge fan of the Avengers titles. I pick every up every now and then, but this is written by Brian Michael Bendis, who writes about half of the Marvel series, and has also just been announced writing the new free Marvel MMO, Massive Multiplayer Online Role-Playing Game. So he's writing that with art by Brian Hitch. Brian Hitch, who most of you might know, did work on the Ultimates, the Avengers version of the the Ultimate version of the Avengers. Sorry, so he's got that kind of realistic style, which is quite cool. So that's pretty much the reason I picked this up. So I wouldn't say that this is actually a jumping on issue.
Cause I was going to ask, does it serve its
purpose? but nevertheless, it's kind of a good breather for the main Avengers storyline. So it centres on Spider-Woman, who the long black hair and the red and black kind of bodysuit, who Brian Michael Bendis absolutely loves her character. Her real name is Jessica Drew, so he brought her back into Marvel continuity a few years ago.
Brought
what
her
did
back,
I say?
Bought her.
Oh, okay, yes.
Because you always correct my pronunciation of noose or news or whatever.
So her Avengers teammates discover that she's actually been a secret agent of S.W.O.R.D., which is S-W-O-R-D, which is basically an organization that hunts aliens on Earth. And apparently there's 32 different alien races on Earth, and it's S.W.O.R.D.'s idea to kind of categorize and
the Men in Black
threats. Kind of like that, but without the singing and dancing.
I don't think they actually sing and dance in the film.
No, they don't. They're making a third one.
Yeah.
So Captain America's not happy. He also discovers the Beast, a Beast from X-Men, who's also an Avenger. He's a member of S.W.O.R.D. too, so he's not happy that they've been keeping secrets from him, that, you know, the clandestine organization. So Spider-Woman, she's kind of doing some investigating, and then she kind of gets knocked out. She wakes up naked in the base of the evil intelligentsia.
That ties in nicely to our next theme, actually.
Which is, you'll see. Well, you don't see anything, obviously, but the intelligentsia is basically a cabal of bad guys, very intelligent bad guys. They've got Claw, Wizard, Red Ghost, who's a Russian guy with grey hair, controls apes, yes, you heard me, and Leader, who's the Hulk villain with the massive elongated forehead. So they find a space knight in space, obviously, and he's basically, that's what they call him, and he's just a guy, well, he's an armor, but they can't open it no matter what they do. So the Avengers come in, Thor hits it, and then this space knight kind of activates and transforms into Ultron, who's one of the longest Avengers baddies ever.
Yawn.
And he vanishes, and then Iron Man says, when Ultron reappears, he'll bring the apocalypse with him. So, as I said, it's not a great jumping on point, but I picked it up for the art because Brian Hitch is...
why do they keep...
Awesome.
Do they just keep renaming them, like, oh, first issue, number one, but then just still just make it like any other Avengers comic?
Yes, Marvel have relaunches all the time. I can't remember how many number ones Wolverine has had over the years. Marvel's it's very continued. It's very difficult to kind of grasp, but so I think they do have like their all ages titles, which are better. But Avengers, X-Men, Spider-Man, you have to follow them for a while before you can't just go into any store and just pick up. But if you go to a free comic store, comic book store on free comic book day, ask the local comic book attendant. And he should be able to, or she should be able to point you in the right direction because there's enough trades to jump on, but this isn't a great jumping on point. But it's a good story with great art and good dialogue, as always, by Brian Michael Bendis.
All right. So you had one more there.
Action Comics 900. It's a 96-page spectacular, as it says on the cover.
I'll be the judge of that.
Action Comics. So this is DC's longest-running title, I believe. It's been in the news recently, but I'll get to that later. So we know that Lex Luthor has been the star of Action Comics for the last few issues, while Superman's been off walking around to try and get in touch with humanity. The controversial grounded storyline that nobody worked. So this is the triumphant return of Superman. He just kind of shows up, but doesn't really. So it's got some good art. It's got the conclusion of the Black Ring storyline, which has focused on Lex. So here Lex and Superman have the ultimate showdown, and Lex kind of turns into a god, and it's pretty good, actually. If you have been following Action Comics, this is a must-have, and the finale of the Black Ring storyline is drawn by a few different artists in the flashback scenes. So we've got kind of Lex as this god, basically, with the power of the Black Ring trying to, and this kid in the Phantom Zone trying to teach Superman humanity and human pain, trying to feel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been Lex's bag for years and years, that Superman's detached from humanity. So it tries to make him feel through what a real human emotion feels like through the deaths and that he's suffered recently. So it's a fitting conclusion and really gets to the heart of who, you know, Superman's nobility and humility and Lex's pride. There's also a pretty good story, a short story, but one pretty awesome nonetheless. It's called Life Support. It's written by Damon Lindelof, who co-created Z Series Lost, with great kind of painted art by, well, I don't know, is it painted?
No, probably. It's digitally
enhanced. Mm. Like supermodels on magazine covers,
yeah.
By Ryan Sook and it's basically about Jor-El, who's the bearded father of Superman.
Kal-El. I don't see any punching in this story.
This is only a few pages, but it's really quite touching. It's basically about Jor-El asking a scientist to help him figure out a way to save his own son. So I don't know if that's going against what previous continuity has established, but it's a good story nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, as I said, Controversy, which is a story called The Incident, written by David Goyer, who co-wrote Batman Begins,
right,
and wrote and directed most of the Blade films, with art by Miguel Sepulveda. And basically, in this story, Aquaman, Superman renounces his American citizenship.
Yeah, terrible action comics if it was about Aquaman.
So he goes to Tehran, and there's an aurora in Iran and the borders, and Superman kind of just stands between the protesters and the military just for 24 hours. He doesn't move just to kind of get his point across, as he doesn't want to interfere. But then the government aren't happy because they say, you know, you've caused an international incident, you know. People assume that you're acting on America's behalf, but you're not. You can't just go off and do these things. And he's saying, well, if that's your attitude, here he says, which is why I intend to speak before the United Nations tomorrow and inform them that I am renouncing my U.S. citizenship. What? I'm tired of having my actions construed as instruments of U.S. policy, truth, justice, and the American way. It's not enough anymore. The world's too small, too connected.
Cool.
Those two panels.
That's interesting.
As you can imagine, the Americans have just jumped on this. Fox News and New York Times, I think, and Washington Times. People have just gone nuts. And you know what those crazy political American TV show hosts, they just love this kind of stuff. So Superman's a commie. And it is interesting because he has always been a global citizen. And he's always, America is his adopted home. He grew up here in Kansas. He's basically just saying, you know, I don't want to say that people think I'm acting on the behalf of America anymore. Mm. I want to kind of be a citizen of the world. So that's what he's doing. So, yeah, it's
interesting. Because superhero comics really are an American product. And really, I mean, their sales overseas are, I mean, they're not insignificant. I mean, really, it's a big deal everywhere. But at its core, it's about American values and American ideals. Very rarely are they not about Americans, or if they go overseas, it's usually to a fictional country.
Which is interesting here, because he's saying, you know, he's in Iran, and he's saying, you know, I stayed in Azadi Square for 24 hours, he mentions somewhere in here, he mentions leaders' names and all that kind of stuff. It is pretty interesting because, it isn't fictional. So it's kind of a brave move, I guess, on DC's part.
So you'd say it's more politically left than Frank Miller's Batman vs. Al-Qaeda proposed?
Which isn't happening anymore, is it? I don't think so. Oh, no, he changed it from Batman to some
random... It's probably for the best.
Stop
letting him write Marvin in, you know, Marv from Sin City in a Batman costume.
I
punch them until my fist bleed.
So that's Action Comics 900, and that's out now. So as any anthology issue, they're not all winners, but there's some good art in here and a few good stories if you're a fan of Superman.
Mm.
Go, Maladdin.
Thank you. On to me. The stuff I read probably couldn't have been more different to what Chris read.
As usual.
Well, yeah, that's our thing, isn't it? But it's always interesting. I finally dipped into... I've had this for ages, and it's sort of been something I've been picking into every now and then. But it's the first volume of the Fantagraphics their proper collection of the complete Peanuts,
yeah.
From Charles M. Schulz. And this is just the first volume, so it's 1950 to 1952. And the comic ran from, 1950 to, I think, about 1980.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
And it was always him. He never had assistants. So the early comics... you can see he went a long way in developing the style. The characters look similar, but quite different. And at the beginning, I mean, the first characters in this are, you know, Charlie Brown, who's always been there, and then Sherm and Patty, who then sort of got phased out. And at this point, Snoopy wasn't clear whose dog he was and all these things. And, and then you start to see Lucy's introduced as a baby, and then she rapidly ages over the next couple of years until she's the same age as Charlie Brown somehow. And at the beginning, he's more of like a wiseacre kind of character.
Okay.
Like, he's a bit more cheeky, but he's still a little bit depressed. Some of my favorite ones here are when the cute little girls are walking around, oh, girls are so sweet, and then they just punch a boy as they're walking along, like, yep, we're definitely smarter and sweeter than boys. And you can sort of see the beginnings of, I mean, Charles M. Schulz is known for, his comics took like on a satirical edge of the things that were happening politically, but he's also known for the kids being quite cruel to each other.
Okay.
And people being depressed on, like, holidays and so forth. And it wasn't all just them playing stickball and, you know.
Yeah, because that is true. Because, now I think about it, when we read that Happiness is a Warm Blanket, Charlie Brown, that Boom Studios put out. We talked about a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah.
The new Peanuts OGN based on the new animated film. And, they are a bit nasty and depressed and stuff, but still funny.
Yeah, that's always been kind of his thing that set him apart. And I think that's why it's appealed more to people of all ages in that. Yeah. They behave more like how I see kids behaving, which is quite cruel. And there's one which they mention here where Charlie Brown's listening to the radio and they're talking about how kind and beautiful kids are, and he picks up the stereo and kicks it across the room. Just little, and the first comic, the punchline in it is how I hate him. So it sort of sets a different mood along.
Is there extras involved in this in this volume?
There are. There's an interview with Schulz, which was conducted in 1980.
Oh, okay.
All of these volumes have additional, like, introductions, sort of essays in there, and sort of break down, like, in this particular volume, it breaks down how he started, his early life, and then how he got into the comic and how it changed. And, like, I was reminded why it looks so odd is because the line work's very sort of clean. He really is... like, he talks about how he trained with, this was before they really worked with pens, so it was all those kind of nibs.
Oh, okay, yep.
So with the same pen, you could do all these different line weights, and he sort of became a master at that. And then it's interesting to hear him talk about in 1980 how the new technology, which is like felt tip pens or in the 70s or whatever, how he didn't want to use it because it's too rigid or whatever. And now it's kind of that discussion is about digital comics, you know, so it's always just that paradigm shifting. And, in his later years, you might recognize more kind of that shaky line Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
And he said that wasn't intentional. I was getting, like, arthritis, so my hands were shaking.
Okay.
And people were, like, replicating that in the cartoons. And he's like, oh, that's nice, but it wasn't intentional.
There's an index in the back. What's that like?
It helps you find the strips.
Okay. Like, they really, by subject?
By subject. So you can remember, there was this one where it was Christmas, and then you've got, okay, Christmas. And in the pages, like, Schroeder, which is a little piano-playing kid, is introduced. He's a lot of fun. And I think Linus gets his first sort of show as well. And they're all babies and then just grow up really quickly. So it's really kind of these proto-Peanuts comics, which are still funny. I find them quite funny. But they haven't taken on... Snoopy's not a character really at this point. Like, I don't think he speaks until one of the very later strips in 1952.
Did he ever speak? I didn't...
He speaks... He starts this all in his head.
Oh, okay.
Like, and to Woodstock later on, which is that bird. But I don't think he ever spoke to Charlie Brown. And at the beginning, he's just kind of like a cute dog.
Yep.
Who kind of just likes sweets and...
Cool. So, black and white, what, 300-400 pages?
Oh, yeah. So, like, these are massive tomes, and I think there's about 20 of them. Yeah, here we go. 340 pages or something, 340 pages.
And from Fantagraphics? Fantagraphics.
Fantagraphics.
Cool.
Yeah. This week as well, I dipped into a comic which I remembered reading and I couldn't remember the name. So I had like an interesting searching process. it's called A Lesson Is Learned, But the Damage Is Irreversible, which is why I couldn't remember that snappy name. But I sort of just remembered it's sort of done in a more painterly digital style. I guess I'll just explain it. It's by, I've written their names here, Dale Berrin, who's the writer, and David Hellman, who's the artist. Now, Dale, I think, went on to write a novel. David Hellman might be familiar to video gamers there. He did all the visual design for the game Braid.
Okay.
Which is that
fantasy
one.
Game,
it's kind of like a platformer which involves rewinding time.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. Okay.
And it had a particular kind of painterly visual look.
Ah, okay.
And he went on to do that, and this was kind of their first project together. It ran, it's pretty short-lived webcomic. It ran from July 2004 to May 2007.
Okay.
Kind of intermittently updating, sometimes like in a flurry, like one every 2 days, and then like one every couple of months kind of thing, which isn't uncommon. But even at the beginning, they weren't doing, I guess for me, you know, most web comics are really like gag comics.
Yeah.
Like, what's the punchline? There's the punchline, and they all talk like DreamWorks characters, like about whatever the current topic is.
Yep.
And there's a few exceptions to that rule, but most web comics are humor based. Whereas this one, even in its early stages where it wasn't quite sure what it wanted to be, it was more interested in exploring like odd themes or just being unusual and sort of making you trying to decipher what it's about. It, like, there might be a few kind of jokes in there, but they're not like, here's a joke. I love lasagna, huh? Okay, no, it's not Garfield, but yeah. They sort of started to experiment with like non-standard panel arrangements and playing of time, and they explored all these surreal themes of dreams and like consciousness, identity, dream and reality, death and love. And there's a quote here from David saying, "Lingering and letting time shuffle its deck is one of the pleasures of reading comics."
Cool.
And I think so too, because you sort of pause on a panel and then you look back on others. And I think they realized that by like trying to really spend time on each comic and let you sort of decipher it in your own time by having a central framework. You know, there's a panel here which sort of centers it all. And it has a very particular painterly digital art style, so it's really loose, and the color is really heavily integrated into the line work. Like, you couldn't have one without the other.
Yep.
It can't just be a black and white comic. And
no, that's true.
We might post an example on the website or just link to their website, because it's still up, which is good. But it's refreshing to see one where it's not just an afterthought to throw color in. You know how I always talk about how color should be a part of the artwork as well?
Yes.
If it's going to be color, not just like neon green.
Just whacked on willy-nilly, but integrated into the whole.
Exactly. And in this one, they really select colors which stand out really vibrantly on a computer screen with a black background.
Oh, okay. Yep.
As you can see, so cyans and like really vibrant greens and all these odd colors. And I mean, they had like a range of like kind of gaggy ones or odd ones. Some of my favorites were one where David, or Dale, I should say, to get back at his ex-girlfriend who's dumped him for a boyfriend made of ethereal flame, he self-immolates himself and ends up in a dimension where you can only access through self-immolation. And he goes, "Oh, it's that monk from Vietnam." And the guy tells him, "In this dimension, there is only a bowl with two oranges and an open window." And he eats one of the oranges and he goes, "Oh my God, it's so juicy." And it's kind of halfway between poetic and like just being surreal.
Absurd.
And odd.
Yeah.
Yeah. A good one is they have like just a couple of dollars left. So David buys a gun whose bullets can only pierce the flesh of your true love. So he just starts shooting around indiscriminately, and then it hits a woman, and he's like, "No, my God, what have I done? At least we had this one moment together." So it's cool. Quite an odd one. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in here, like involving the devil. There's a great piece where the world is shrinking, so each tier below the top tier starts to get smaller and smaller and smaller, but the detail doesn't degrade. It's really, really detailed, so you can zoom in and look at all these little intricately carved things. It's not going to be for everyone, and it's not a humor strip, but if you're into something which
experimental
and also kind of, especially with the panel arrangements and so forth, and you can see them grow over the course of it. It's still online. Lesson is learned, but the damage is irreversible. They've won a lot of awards, like 2005 Web Cartoonist Choice Awards. They've written for McSweeney's, who you may have.
Yes.
Yeah. And they got featured in Attitude 3, which was a book that came out fairly regularly alongside Nick Gurich of PBF and Perry Barwell Fellowship.
Okay, yeah.
And Ryan North, who writes Dinosaur Comics.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's worth checking out for that. I'd thoroughly recommend it if you are a bit tired of the same old webcomics making jokes about video games. So... Yeah.
You know
what?
You know the Spice Girls song "Wannabe." If you want to be my lover, first go
I
with
could lie
your
and
friends.
Say I don't, but I know it very well.
Make yeah. it last forever. Over the last week, I've heard it like three times just in my daily activities.
Oh, I'm so
Once
sorry.
Was on the long weekend. They had the MTV had the top 1,000 songs.
Mm.
It's on there. Yep. Yesterday, I was at a cafe and it was blaring very loud. And then this morning, the train station, there's a guy, there's an old guy with a trolley that hands out organ donor forms. and it was playing on his little trolley.
Oh, okay.
Everyone should be an organ donor, by the way. But yeah, I just found it quite funny that this song has been following me wherever I go, haunting my dreams.
How do I segue from that?
I don't know, I just wanted to mention it because I was amused by it. And I built two IKEA bookcases on the long weekend.
Oh, wow. To house all your comics?
Correct.
Wow. Do you reckon that it's even going to come close?
No.
No.
It's just one from my new house that I've just moved into.
Mm.
So there's comics and CDs and DVDs just in plastic tubs at the moment.
Yeah. I find that's the challenge now. I've sort of run out of space, so it's kind of just jammed into, if there's a bit of space above the next below the next shelf and
yes.
above the books, like cram them
Nook
in
and
there.
Cranny.
And the, yeah. Yes. It's when the shelves are sagging that you know you've got a problem.
Sagging shelves.
Yeah. Well, I looked at those IKEA bookshelves and I did the math on how much weight you're supposed to put on each one. And I'm like, no, I'm really overdoing it now. Because comics weigh a lot.
Yeah, I suppose if you've got hefty tomes like we do.
Yeah.
Collected editions and whatnot.
Mm. Yeah, the pages are a heavier stock than novels and things.
Oh, yeah, that Absolute Kingdom Come, that weighs a couple of kilos or something ridiculous.
I think it's so they can charge you in postage. That's how
I'm
they
so
get
cynical,
you.
So cynical, Mladen.
What? Of course I am. Yeah, comics fans are cynical. That's our thing that we do. And I guess this is a cynical topic as well, because finally, that's kind of an entryway. Now, I don't know how to what extent Chris will agree with me, but I'm sure some of you may have noticed the how often superhero comics in particular, and we'll just try and rein it into that field, otherwise we'll be here all day, have a problem with drawing women. Now, it could be to the extent that all female superheroes are sexy and they have near identical bodies, depending on which artist draws them, or why you don't really see any female characters who aren't sexy. Do you know what I mean? Am I making you uncomfortable, Chris?
No, I'm just flicking through my...
Except for like nanas, like...
Aunt May.
Aunt May.
Aunt May's not sexy.
Yeah, well, she could be. Well, yeah.
She probably was.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll exclude... I won't say it's just for superhero comics, because definitely manga has the same problem with depicting women, upskirt shots, and you could say they're more gratuitous. But I guess because this field of comics is more familiar to you,
yep.
We'll sort of rein it in there. And I guess just as a good example, I dipped into Wizard did a How to Draw series.
Wizard, which is the classic comics magazine, that just closed,
yes.
Which started off really good and then ended up as just being... silly.
Yeah.
As this example illustrates.
Right. Oh, that's professional.
Wow.
Let me just stop and answer that.
That sounds like the theme song to Look Around You.
It is.
Do you know Look Around You?
Yeah.
Oh.
Look Around You's a great show.
Why haven't we talked about this?
Oh, Look Around You's amazing. Maybe we'll have to just stop this podcast and watch an episode. Yeah. Yeah, that is. Good call.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess we have to get back to the topic. Anyway, they did a How to Draw Heroic Anatomy book. Now, with that title, you think, oh, good, like women with heroic anatomy. So the men, like, in the book have a range of body types. There's the huge dude. There's the skinny, lean Spider-Man type.
Yep.
You know, Hulk character, Captain America, and, like, you know, the range of them. And they're all muscular, all really powerful looking. And even what they call the average normal man is built with this incredibly toned musculature,
yes.
Like a swimmer or something. So with that, like, for men with muscle, to make the human body look more regal, sleek, and appealing is their sort of quote. That's the...
I think it started with when John Byrne started in 1986. He did the Man of Steel miniseries, which
right.
revamped Superman. But up until that point, if you think about classic Superman artists like your Wayne Boring and your Kurt
what
Swan,
a name.
Yeah, and Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster, those days,
yeah.
Superman was just like, even stars today, they've all got six packs. Like, you know, how long is it going to be before, you know, Justin Bieber and Will Smith's kids start flaunting their six pack? But, like, sex symbols back in, like, say, Burt Reynolds' day or.
They were older men, weren't they? Yeah.
Well, they didn't. It wasn't about their six pack and it wasn't about their physique.
Well, I almost disagree because, I mean, really, the first Superman was kind of like a Charles Atlas character. He was meant to look like a circus strongman.
He did, but he wasn't well-toned. He wasn't, you know, he had a skin-tight bodysuit, but it wasn't...
I'm wondering if that's because...
It was about mass. It wasn't about tone.
But I'm wondering if that's because we have different ideals of what was a powerful look for a man.
That's my point, I think. Back in the 70s and 60s and before then. But then when we had the 80s, we had, Bruce Lee movies where running around with the shirt off. And then we had Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
We had Stallone. Like, if you see the difference between Stallone in... The first two Rockies?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Steroid abuse.
Yeah, like Rocky 2, he's like cut, man, but Rocky 1, he just looks like, you know, a meat packer, and which he was. But in the comics, they reflected that in the time, and John Byrne's Superman was the first time where we saw someone with actual biceps, six-pack, big thighs, and he looked...
A bit more lean, but still kind of powerful. I get what you're saying.
From that point on, every superhero, like even like your Hal Jordan, like your Green Lantern, who was just a pilot, he had, everyone in the Batman universe except for Alfred has a six-pack. Like, even just normal...
He probably does.
Even just normal characters, like superheroes that... Like Kyle Rayner, when he became Green Lantern in the 90s after Hal Jordan went crazy, he was just a bum. He was like an art student or an artist.
Yeah.
As soon as he puts on a costume, he's got a six-pack.
It's his optimized image of himself. Yeah.
Every character, as soon as they put on a costume, it becomes a superhero or villain. Mm-hmm. Just gets an instant six-pack transplant.
Yeah. I guess it's there is an element of sort of the idea of someone being powerful also became kind of a sexy thing. So dudes are more made to look more attractive, which might be what you're saying.
And superhero comics aren't realistic, let's face it. I guess if you look at, say, Frank Miller's Sin City, the body types would be different. Well, at least with the men. The women all look like prostitutes, and most of the cast are.
Whores everywhere.
But the men are hulking and fat, and every X-Men character
looks like
they're supermodels, and there's no ugly people in superhero comics, really.
That's true. Even Professor X is quite handsome in the face.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
And if he wasn't a mutant, he'd be like a Yul Brynner type, you know, still Yul Brynner's like the handsome bald man. That'll work for me. Patrick Stewart's not a bad looking guy, but there you go. Yeah, he's all right. Make it so. and just on the other side of the coin, and in that wizard thing. So at all times they show the woman, you know, to make a powerful look. Their pelvis is like cocked to one side.
Yes.
Exaggerate the boobs and the butt spinal twist. So there's, you know, a phenomenon of, where a woman will be standing in a comic and their back will be twisted in such a way that you can look at their butt and their boobs at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if there's a technical term for that artistic technique, I believe.
The spinal conundrum.
Yeah, I believe when Leonardo da Vinci drew, the Virgin Mary in the spinal twist position, he called it, yeah. But, and it's easiest to see, for example, in like the 90s Image comics.
90s Image.
Yeah.
It was the pivotal time for this. Yes, you're right.
And specifically, I guess we can specifically say Liefeld, who had a problem with anatomy anyway.
Correct.
The way he draws women is basically, the waist is the pivot point where you can twist them 180 degrees. so you can look at them in all ways. And it's not just the body type with the women in this book. I mean, she can be drawn to be attractive, but not stand as if she's like posing for a swimwear shoot at all times. I guess it's
you're right. In the 90s, you might recall Marvel and Image. I don't think DC, but I know Marvel and Image had swimsuit specials where they'd have their superhero. Do you remember this? Superhero
when it's
posing in swimsuits.
They had one with the dudes as well.
Did they?
Yeah. I don't know how well that sold. Yeah.
And I do remember reading Jim Lee's X-Men when Jim Lee, who went on to become one of the founders of Image Comics in the mid-90s, he was drawing an issue of the X-Men, and he drew... Or the X-Men in a pool part Scott Summers, Cyclops in his shorts and...
Does he still wear the visor when he's at a pool part?
Yeah. And Psylocke, I've had a thing for Psylocke ever since, if you could be in love with a fictional character.
She never wore much to begin with, did she?
No, but she was coming out of the water in a bikini with her hair all back, and then Scott Summers just like ogling. And I remember reading that as a teenage boy and going, interesting. But up until that point, I never really noticed. But, and I think, from the 80s and 90s, I mean, we'd like to think that it's less now, but
Trying to be less obvious, but yes. I think it's, in many ways, it's more obvious. And
well, I was flicking through the previews, the monthly previews catalog, which comes out every month, which tells you what new comics are coming out. I was flicking through that yesterday and this morning, looking at all the covers, and the covers now are more designed.
Yeah,
and whereas back in the day, they were more
the character
sexy,
screaming. And holding
lots of
weapon,
that. But now it's more design because they don't really put text apart from the logo, and the creators' names. They don't put captions, speech balloons on covers anymore. Really,
that's a shame.
But so the covers now are more designed, and it's usually a different cover artist than the interior.
But sometimes don't even have anything to do with the story if it's like a theme of like Tron-themed covers, for example.
But those are the variant covers, but yes, you're right.
Oh, were they variants? Oh,
they
okay.
were variants, oh, okay. But yes, you're right. But yeah, but back in the day, in the 90s and 80s, there were more sexy covers.
Yeah.
And we were looking at the wonderful work of Greg Horn earlier, who some of you might be familiar with. He's released a couple of art books, but he's a painter.
God.
Not like an Alex Ross kind of style painter, more of I guess he probably uses Photoshop more than an actual paintbrush, but Greg Horn's a cover artist who seems to is. There's a wonderful post on Comics Alliance at the moment, which if you Google Comics Alliance, Greg Horn, I think they've got a post called "The Seven Most Ludicrous Greg Horn Covers" or something.
Yeah.
And we're looking at one now, which I think was actually commissioned on an actual cover with Batman standing behind Catwoman, Catwoman's bending over. Basically with a bum
in the doggy
air.
Style position.
Yeah, licking milk from a saucer. Some of his
looks like Batman's getting ready to do a bit of the old cat rape there.
Well, he doesn't have his cape on, so
it's billowing. That's why you can't see it.
Oh,
it's billowing.
Yeah, right, I'll see that now. But yeah, some of these posts are quite interesting. That's a Greg Horn for you. But I think what's interesting is, now that the internet is with us, any time any vaguely kind of misogynistic kind of artwork or anything like that comes up, all these comic sites just jump on it straight away. They can't get away with it as much anymore, whereas perhaps the pre-internet days,
it was a niche thing. And
People kind of – and I think the target audience has changed somewhat as well.
Yeah.
Again, the internet has changed stuff now. I think the audience is slightly older that read comics these days, and we have comics in libraries and – bookstores and stuff, which didn't happen as much back in the 80s and 90s.
Mm.
But Marvel and DC were pretty smart because they knew that in the period of the 80s and 90s, comics were mainly for teenage boys.
Yeah.
And they'd always put buxom girls to appeal to it. As, let's face it, every movie, I mean, how many action films are there with sexy women and rap or hip-hop songs? It's not like comics is the only art form that does this, but I guess it's more striking because it's a visual medium.
Yeah, I'm not meaning to single out superhero comics, but it is like a part
of that. But it is the easiest to do it because it does have skin-tight costumes, pretty-looking people bouncing around in awkward poses, fighting each other, and it's all very melodramatic. So I think it's easier for this stuff to become so obvious.
And, I mean, a lot of the films like, say, the Resident Evil sort of things with what's-her-face in it from Fifth Element.
Mila Jovovich.
I mean, I think they draw a lot more from comic books in their inspiration. So it's not like the sassy, sexy females who appear in Transformers are actually meant to be heroes. Like, I don't think anyone's meant to think of
Megan Fox.
I can't even bother to remember her name.
She's not in the third film anyway.
What a surprise.
Yes.
No one's meant to think of her as the hero. She's just there to look pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, in this one where they are meant to look powerful, I mean, in here, the muscle forms are basically non-existent. And I mean, in this wizard thing, they say, I have a quote here about withdrawing arms. For women, indicate the muscle masses in the arms, but try not to overemphasize them, for this may give them a more masculine appearance. So
it's interesting because there aren't any, like, if you think female bodybuilder type shapes, I can't think of any characters that have that. We know that Power Girl is known as a buxom.
She-Hulk's probably the closest.
She-Hulk,
because she tends to be drawn more cut. Yeah. And Big Barda, depending on who's drawing her,
oh, good point. Yes,
tends to be drawn.
DC Comics character.
Yeah. I mean, yep. She's described differently to how people draw her because she's meant to be sort of more big and kind of imposing, but she tends to just be drawn slightly taller but still a swimsuit model.
Yep.
Depending on who's doing it, obviously. But those were examples I could only think of
point.
Counters. But they're still, you know, sexy bodybuilders, which is fine because there are sexy bodybuilders.
There are.
Yes.
Some dudes many of them.
There's that Louis Theroux documentary where... do you watch Louis Theroux's?
I'm familiar. English documentary.
Yeah, that's the guy. He did a special on female bodybuilders.
Okay.
And there's a whole subgenre of softcore porn built around starring these women, and he guest stars in one of them as an extra who walks in like a military guy and then gets strangled with her thighs. So these guys get off on seeing
like
these female
James Bond villain in Goldeneye.
Yeah, that's it.
Xenia on the top.
Was that a name?
Played by Famke Janssen.
Yeah,
she was, went on to play X-Men.
Yeah, and nothing
Phoenix.
Else since.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a shame. But we'll just sort of keep going. And I just wanted to, I mean, the men are drawn sexily, but like you do often hear that argument, you know, but superhero men are drawn sexily too, so they aren't sexist. But the men are designed for maximum power.
And I think superhero men, their costumes tend to be more covering.
Yes.
And they don't, I mean, a lot
they're
of
not posing
a lot of them
of the
have
time.
Masks,
yeah,
and a lot of them cover their full body. Whereas women like them, just
yeah, they don't
at
tend
the
to
Avengers,
have masks, do they?
Avengers ones,
yeah.
No, like Ms. Marvel, and you know, characters like that. She's basically just got like a one piece bathing suit with a red sash,
yeah.
But then again, you have like, you know, the Invisible Woman,
yeah,
and she's got like a just the same costume that the guys do in her Fantastic Four team.
Yeah, I guess it's not so much... It could be partially the costume because, I mean, we've kind of hopefully gone away from, like, the big cut V-neck kind of thing which you saw in 90s and even in the 80s, like, so you could see everything kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's still, like, they're posed differently. Like, if the dude is punching someone, he's punching them. But when the girl's punching someone, her butt's kind of askew to the camera a bit. And I guess that's more what the audience wants. But, like this said, if the women aren't supposed to be drawn with powerful muscles because then they look like dudes.
Too masculine. Unappealing.
Mm.
I did want to mention the Wonder Woman costume redesign.
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice because it covers a lot more of her body.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good choice. You know, the original Wonder Woman costume.
Bit of a joke.
In the, what's the joke?
That her costume, her original costume.
Oh, yes, it was. Yeah, it's basically just star-spangled panties and a brassiere and red boots. But now it pretty much covers her whole costume, her whole body. She's got the black pants on and more armor kind of glove things and stuff. So,
Does she have high heel boots on? That's the question.
No.
See, there you go.
Yeah, I know. They never made sense to me because it's surprising the number of superheroes who had high heels boots.
Mm. Yeah, I did want to read this quote because I thought it was hilarious. This is from a site called Girls Read Comics, which...
I did want to mention that, actually, because, there are quite a few girl-centric sites out, and I couldn't remember the names of them, so I'm glad you mentioned that.
This one is being no longer updated, but I remember reading it back in the day, and I'll just quickly read it. Nowhere but in comics or other carefully controlled media does one find such stunning physical specimens of manhood. Comic book guys often have symmetrical features, are well, often over-muscled, and are generally good-looking. However, you don't find many of them striding along in bathing suits and high-heeled boots, wrenching their backs out as they hurl their hips around and thrust their tumescent, massive penises and firmly rounded butts at the reader. And I thought that was a well-exercised point where I guess the focus is different. But and it's gone to the point where women who shouldn't be sexy are drawn sexy. And a good example is, you know, the Cassandra Cain Batgirl?
Yes.
Who seems to have had frequent boob jobs since her debut.
Yes, I do maybe mention this before, yes.
Yeah.
But it does depend on the artist.
Yeah, that's true. But I guess... She was basically like a kind of gymnastic young Asian girl, and I think she's still underage, but now they kind of draw her the same way they draw every other superhero character. And I mean, I guess the prime example, which was a big point for this whole argument, was when Spoiler was killed.
Spoiler was the Stephanie Brown, who was the girlfriend of Tim Drake, the third Robin, and for a brief time she became the female Robin, and she was also a character called Spoiler, who was like in a purple outfit and would help Batman and Robin from time to time, fellow crime fighter, and she died.
Yeah,
but she came back.
Well, she was sort of killed and tortured by Black Mask, which is a Batman villain during the War Games series.
Yep.
I can't recall the character, the writer's names on that at the moment, but you can look it up because it was she wasn't hugely popular among male readers, but female readers really liked her. And female superhero comic readers aren't it's not the smallest subgroup. There are quite a few.
Yep.
It's as we were talking, there aren't that many female creators involved in superhero comics.
No.
Yeah. Which maybe is why she got killed off, unfortunately. But the way she was killed off, during her death and her torture of this, you know, underage girl, she was shown in like sexy positions. Which is kind of troubling, one.
Yes.
It's a bit torture porn for my tastes. And two, in the same series, they had a flashback to Jason Todd's death.
It was the second Robin.
Yes. Killed back in the late 80s
yeah.
by phone pole. And his death is treated with, you know, respect and so forth. So I guess you see these two Robins die in the same comic, but one is kind of treated for, like, this really troubling sex appeal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how to... Is that something you've even noticed at the time?
I didn't, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Did you read the storyline, or do you remember that one?
I don't. I've seen bits of it, but I haven't read the whole story.
But I guess, I don't want to get too much into the sexism thing, but it's just it sort of identifies that. I guess you've listed enough examples of it. I guess we can talk about why this is happening or who's driving it. Like,
I don't know. I mean, you would think most of this is intentional, but I mean, you think artists just... The only way they know how to draw females is kind of sexually, because that's what they've grown up seeing, and
they're taught to draw that way.
And
wizard.
When they're drawing when they're drawing superhero comics, they aren't drawing ugly people that sit on the couch. They are drawing dynamic people saving the world. So it's only natural that they strike a pose every now and then.
Sure. Oh, yeah, like a heroic pose, but a sexy and a heroic pose are different things.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, otherwise it would be like men's swimsuit illustrated. I don't know, what do you call the men's ones? I don't buy a lot of men's gay magazines. Chris, you know more about that.
We'll get back to you on that one.
Burn. Hold on, you want me to pause it? No, okay. But I guess it's not a new phenomenon. I mean, Wonder Woman, she began as like a bondage fetish character.
That's true.
Very subtly disguised.
Yes. When Wonder Woman was first introduced pre-World War II, all DC characters had a weird kind of weakness. So Superman had kryptonite, the original Green Lantern, couldn't fight anything the color yellow. And Wonder Woman was whenever you tied her up, she lost her powers.
Yeah.
And she got tied up a lot.
A lot, yeah. And she lived among a race of attractive women, and I don't know, it's just that whole thing. And even Archie Comics did this. I mean, Betty and Veronica, the number of times you see them in swimsuits in that comic
is really?
Pretty amazing.
Okay.
And you'd think in an all-ages comic like that, they're not above a bit of the old...
Well, there's a gay character in Archie now.
I guess they're...
Kevin Keller.
I guess this... I don't know what Archie's about. I can't be bothered reading an Archie comic, really.
No, me neither.
Okay, fair enough. But, we'll put up a picture of... and new comics really are the one we're talking about here. Adam Hughes's women all have identical measurements, really. They're kind of the same woman, but with different outfits. But I think, as you were saying, they draw a lot of superhero writers, can only draw a certain type of person anyway.
That could be true. I think, Adam Hughes is a good one, but I think his art is never really cheesecakey. It's usually cheeky, I would say.
He strikes a balance, maybe.
Yeah. I never feel guilty looking at an Adam Hughes cover because he's a fantastic artist. Mm. He's got an art book out now actually called, Cover Run. Something like that.
With Catwoman on the cover on the white background.
Yeah, and he's done some great Wonder Woman and Catwoman covers over the years. But he's a guy who knows his forte very well.
Yeah. Unlike feeling guilty if you look at, say, a Greg Land piece of work, who is notorious for other reasons of tracing other artists' work, which you shouldn't do, but he also is renowned for tracing stills from pornos to draw the female characters. Yeah. People have...
compared...
Yeah, they've compared, and if you look at the poses here, which is meant to be the girl kicking someone, but it's, we'll put it on the site. I think you'll just use your imagination and you'll see. It does look like she's launching a fart there, but, it's clearly from porno. There's also Frank Miller's always been
All-Star Batman and Robin?
Yeah, Vicky Vale's talking butt.
Oh, I don't remember that.
There's a close-up of her ass, and in the script, he specifically writes to Jim Lee, okay, let's do a full close-up of her butt here. And, like, he writes instructions to the artist in the seediest way possible. Like, do you think it's really an editorial thing, or if just the artists are driving it? Because I can't help but feel the editors are going, look, we know our market really are... They're not complaining, so let's keep giving them what we think they want, or I don't know.
Well, I mean, the internet drives a lot, and you'd be surprised how much publishers and even movie studios listen to kind of chatter on the internet and
really?
Make changes. Okay. But, yeah, ultimately the editors are in control. But when you get to a, you know, stature of Jim Lee or Frank Miller,
yep.
they can basically do what you want.
Yeah.
You know.
And Frank Miller's definitely just doing whatever he wants. And well, no
yes.
one's stopping him.
Correct.
Yeah. That's a different discussion. That gets back into when we talked about vanity projects.
Yeah,
yeah, back in what, the first episode?
Oh, not that early.
Was it? Okay. But I was sort of wondering if it's something that all superhero comic readers want. Is it something that you look for? Like, you'd be disappointed if it wasn't there?
No, I didn't even notice. And because, as I said, I don't think it's as obvious as it is in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just looking, I was just flicking through, yeah, there's the Look Around You theme again. Look Around You is a great UK series that lasted for 2 seasons. Very funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just looking at the Avengers Brightest Day in Action Comics, and I can't see any... There's even in the Action Comics 900
it's toned down a bit, yeah.
There's a bit where, Supergirl and all the other Superman-themed heroes are fighting, and even though her costume is quite
a bit risky, she's got
a midriff and a little blue skirt, but she's not striking any poses here.
They've kind of turned it down. I mean, in this one, in the Avengers comic, Spider-Woman gets, locked up naked, but they kind of... restrain themselves just a little bit.
It's shadows everywhere.
I mean, the idea of it's very, but it's almost like the artist went, no, okay, I'm not drawing it in the way you imagined, you CD writers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just looking at the Action Comics 900s, all the superheroes' costumes are tattered, and it's Supergirl's costume isn't tattered more than the other guys, really.
Yeah.
I think it's less now than it once was, again, because the internet fans are a lot more vocal than they once were.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, like, for example, look at that. That's Lois Lane. But I think that's there's a great
she
Jeff
could
Johns.
Never wear a skirt that short to work, my
Jeff
friend.
Johns and Gary Frank. Oh, we got people at work that wear... in the Action Comics 900, there's a little story by Jeff Johns and Gary Frank called Friday Night in the 21st Century, and it's basically just Lois Lane in a little, a little skirt with the sleeves rolled up. But I think... Lois Lane is an attractive character.
Yeah, that's her point. She's not meant to be a hero.
Yeah, I mean, she's not showing any massive cleavage or whatever. She's just, she's an army brat.
She does have her buttons discreetly buttoned down on that blouse. You wouldn't wear that to work like that, I don't think.
Well, she's a star reporter.
But yeah, as you said, she's meant to be. Like, the whole point of Lois Lane is she's meant to be the female.
And she doesn't care.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just not like she's,
she's not a hero, so who cares?
Yeah. You know? But, yeah, I think editors and publishers are a lot more aware of that this isn't a controversial issue. So I think it's less now. But when it does happen, fans jump on message boards.
Yeah, and then you hear a lot of craziness. But I guess it's almost something you see more in covers, which makes me think, okay, it's got to be something that's driving a marketing tool because well, let's say, I wonder if they're trying to appeal to the guys who buy Witchblade or every comic from Top Cow.
Yes, or the other one is Lady Death, who's still around. She's basically an albino in a bikini. Or the classic one is Jim
Power.
Jim Balance Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose.
Oh yeah.
If you're safe enough, you can Google the image of that. But
oh my God,
it's pretty out there. But it's almost like they're segregated. Like those superhero comics, sure, are a bit cheesecakey.
Yeah,
nowhere near as they used to be. But the ones that are over the top aren't mainstream publishers anymore.
I'm hoping it's because really it's like a specific subset of superhero comics buyers and comic buyers in general, just not superhero, like who look for that in those comics, who buy Witchblade and all that because that's what they like.
They buy their own,
and they put that sort of stuff on sometimes on DC and Marvel covers to appeal to those guys, but the comics aren't full of it anymore.
Yeah, that could make sense.
So hopefully that's a sign that
and also Marvel and DC superheroes are now multimedia and cinematic heroes, so they can't be too risque in what they put out there.
Are there any female Avengers in the new Avengers film coming up?
Yes, Black Widow. Black Widow. Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson.
And her costume is basically a big black one piece.
Yeah. I think it'd be very hard to play down the her attractiveness, though.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Tony Stark will be a...
Put her in like a Muslim headdress or something.
I can't see that happening.
Really? Okay. All right. Scarlett, maybe someone to consider?
Well, the Hulk, he's in it, and, you know, the Hulk never really has a... Yeah, sure, he's green and huge, yeah. But, you know, he's still mainly minimal clothing.
Yeah, but is he sexy? I don't think so.
I'm sure some women might be attracted to green monsters.
I don't think there's any equivalent of, like, a Hulk character for women, though, is there?
Like, what do you mean?
Like, who looks like that, who basically is...
But is a woman.
Yeah. Like, he's not attractive. He's like a giant Frankensteinish brute. You know, brute. You know what I mean? I don't know.
But some women love Wolverine. I think he's sexy. And
he's not built like the Hulk. So.
But he's a short, hairy midget.
No, I meant more of female characters who are drawn in that style.
Okay.
I can't think of any.
No, not really.
Is there the Blobette?
No.
I feel like there should be. Oh, okay, I could think of one. In the New Mutants run by Chris Claremont, there was a giant female character. Okay. But she wasn't meant to be a hero, and she was a blob-like thing and a psychic. But Chris Claremont was always a bit ahead of the curve, I think, anyway. So, yeah, he seemed to get it. There are guys who don't write Cheesecake, and I don't want to say that all the comics are like this, but
no,
it is something that's noticeable and maybe something to think about next time you're looking at something on the comic shelf. Probably exhausted the topic.
Correct, Amando.
We're both exhausted. I want to sleep.
Thanks for listening, as always. That has been our body image discussion.
Yeah.
If you want to email us and tell us any examples or something that you
or if you disagree
to counteract what we've said, yes, you can email Chris, K-R-I-S, at extrasequential.com, and my blog is comicbookjesus.com. Take it away, Lucasen.
Oh, thanks. Music for the show is purgeaudit.com. And I was thinking of trying to lead out with Wannabe, but I'm guessing there's copyright issues there.
As I stopped us before, we played the Look Around debut song twice.
Yeah, that was unintentional. Maybe once more as we lead out, I get another message. Alrighty.
So next week, Free Comic Book Day.
Yep.
So we will hopefully put it up before next weekend.
Yeah, it'll go up before then. Definitely tune in, and we'll be giving you some recommendations. And take a friend who maybe doesn't really know anything about comics. Maybe
yes.
Get them something they might enjoy.
Yeah, pick something up for them or bring them along. That would be a good idea, Maladdin.
Yes.
The more the merrier.
Thanks.
Hand in hand.
It was my idea. Feel free to use it.
Thanks.
All right. See everyone.
Peace out. I want to be my lover. First you gotta hear it from friends.